There surely must be some kind of response to this. Peasants are aware that land is being appropriated, being grabbed. I mean, what kind of response is there being?
What I was able to see is there's a lot of anger on the ground, of course, at what's happening. Is it manifesting in any kind of strong, unified way? Well, not yet. And with the Pro-Savannah project, most communities just aren't even aware of it. They didn't have any information. When I was there in June, that's when we started an investigation with La Via Campesina and with UNAC. UNAC is the National Federation of Peasant Organizations in the country. There was very little information that anybody had. We met with some main people in government. So, say, in Nampula, the provincial director of agriculture. We met with researchers. We met with Brazilian researchers who were there working under the Pro-Savannah project. We met with promoters from the Brazilian Agency for Cooperation. We tried to meet with Japan. We talked to some of the private sector, mainly this GV Agro Fund from Brazil. We talked with people within the Ministry of Agriculture and the Center of Investment in Mozambique. And from there, you can trace out a picture. And then you start to see the real contours of this and how awful this project is and what are the implications for people. And then you can start bringing that information to the local groups and to the organizations. And that is what UNAC and others now are doing. There's also some groups who have been doing some studies on the Pro-Savannah project and who have been making that information available as well. And with that information, I think it's quite clear to the peasant leaders that this project just can't go forward. They're incensed by the lack of transparency. I mean, the whole blueprint for this project, which is supposed to trace out where the farms are going to be, where the processing industry is going to be, essentially is going to map out the whole project, that's supposed to be finished by July 2013. Up until this point, there has not been a consultation with any farmers, legitimate farmers organizations, about the project. So they haven't had a chance to input. So with this, in this situation, the total lack of transparency, the enormity of the project, the fact that there's no lands available, the experiences that communities have already had with the land grabs in the country, I think it's quite clear to people on the ground, to the peasants in those communities, that this project goes against their interests. And so at the beginning of October, for the first time, UNAC was able to organize a meeting of delegates from the various chapters, local chapters of UNAC, of the regional peasant organizations, to come together in Nampula and there to get the information about what was happening. It was the first time that they were able to do this, to hear about what was involved, to hear about what the government had been doing, to hear what their forces had been up to, and to try to take a position. And they took quite a strong position on the Pro-Savannah project, saying that it was unacceptable, the lack of transparency, that there was no place for large-scale commercial agriculture in the area. They were totally against the idea of Brazilian farmers coming in and setting up these large-scale farms in this part of Mozambique or in the country in general. And they were calling for the government to do something to support small-scale agriculture and the development of local markets in the country. I mean, this is a country where in that area, very lush area, very, very strong agriculture. There's really, you go to the communities and, you know, there's poverty in the sense where there's, you know, no electricity, the roads are in a terrible state, there's very little when it comes to any kind of social services. But in terms of the availability of food, in terms of people able to sustain their livelihoods, I mean, that's not in question. These are not desperate communities. So they have on their side, I think, that strength in their own ability to look after themselves. And what they want is for the government, I think, to back off and to then put in place real policies that can support their livelihoods.
But the conventional argument is that, well, the reaction of these peasants is sort of a Luddite reaction. Come on, this is social progress, this is Africa is deprived of capital investment, especially in agriculture. Agriculture development will ensure that there's lots of food available, much higher productivity, and really people need to get modern. So why not?
Well, in this case, I think it's about making people landless. I mean, if your only real source, if you want to look at it even in a capitalist way, your only capital is your land. and somebody comes and takes that away from you, that doesn't equate to development. I mean, there's no real progress in that for your family. If you're talking about development of commercial agriculture as somehow going to be a way for these countries in Africa to progress, or whatever kind of term you want to put on it, to my mind, and having heard and listened to peasant organizations in Africa for a long time now, having spent quite a considerable amount of time in Africa, the question is not the capacities of the farmers, local farming systems, the pastoralist systems, the small-scale fisher folk. They are extremely productive systems of agriculture. What breaks down is that you have policy environment which tends to kill off that production. It destroys local markets by bringing in cheap subsidized commodities. Like in Maputo, you will struggle to find any locally produced foods. The fruits come from South Africa. The dairy comes from, you know, you buy a carton of milk, it comes from Germany. The poultry that you'll see in the city will come from South Africa. There's no reason why that can't come from local production. That's what should be invested in. That's what should be supported. What we have in this case is we have the transplanting of this gigantic industrial model of agriculture from somewhere else, with capital from somewhere else. It's even going to be farmed by people coming from somewhere else. And a displacement of the local markets and the local production systems, the local villages, people's lives. And they will be sent into the cities where there is absolutely no work. There's no industrial program in Mozambique to try to absorb the surplus amount of labor that's going to be created by these kinds of programs. And this is not just Mozambique. The Ethiopian Minister of Agriculture, when questioned about the land grab, said, well, we want to turn our country into an industrial we currently have 80% of our population in rural areas. Within a couple decades, we want that to be 20%. What does that mean? What will these people do to survive? And this is the Minister of Agriculture. He's not talking from any kind of industrial program.
But here you have a government which has fought a long liberation war. You have Frelimo, which still is the dominant force in Mozambique. Many of us spent many years of our lives in solidarity work with this apparently progressive movement. How come they're doing this?
I can't answer on behalf of African governments. I mean, they often get that question of what's in it for the governments. I mean, in part, you can imagine that there is this kind of logic of development, that foreign investment is the way to go, that you need foreign investment in order to, I don't know, build up your infrastructure. This is the idea, that foreign investment will bring development. And I don't think there's much of a critical perspective being given to what that foreign investment looks like. I mean, if it's, you know, a mining company just coming in to strip out the gold in Tanzania without paying much at all in terms of its royalties to the government, whether it's a land grabbers who are coming in and taking over the most productive lands, displacing local peasants and then producing food for export, generally with huge tax holidays, with all kinds of waivers when it comes to taxes on importing machinery and things like that. It's very hard economically to make an argument that there's any kind of real benefits that are going to go to the people of these countries with those kind of investments, and yet they are happening in Africa all the time, not just Africa, I mean globally. There is something obviously else that's going on there, and I think it's for the governments themselves to explain, you know, what is it that they're after with these kind of projects? Who's getting what?
Yes.
Who's profiting from this?
You've mentioned the involvement of Brazilian capital and the public funds, actually, from Japan, from GIC, JIC involvement. But aren't there also other players there?
Oh, yes.
I've read about the Food and Agricultural Organization, the UN organization, which uses public funds. There's the African Development Bank, which actually invested heavily in the development of the railway. So these are interconnected.
Absolutely. And sometimes it's very directly linked. I mean, the World Bank, for instance, has been directly involved in some of the land grabs that have happened in Africa. There's also things like political risk insurance that they provide to the investors. Yes, the regional banks also have an involvement. Yes, absolutely, the transnational banks would be involved in these projects. I mean, that's where the finance will come from, and will come from, if the Brazilian farming companies are going to go set up there, they're going to do so with the backing of financial institutions, with the backing of banks. It could be private equity funds. It could be private equity funds backed by development finance institutions, which happens now all the time. I mean, a lot of development aid now is channeled into private equity outfits, which invest in these kinds of projects. You also have corporations that are involved. I mean, we've been talking about ProSavanna, but Japan is also involved with the U.S. in spearheading this G8 project that is supposed to deal with food and hunger as a response to the food crisis. One of its main projects is in Mozambique, and it's this sort of public-private sector cooperation project, which involves Cargill and other large agribusinesses from the West to develop agriculture in Mozambique. And they are saying that this will be a pilot project for the voluntary guidelines on land governance, which were adopted at the FAO, and for the principles on responsible agricultural investment, which the World Bank was first proposing as a way to kind of manage the land grabs, the global land grabs, and which have become now part and parcel of, say, the pension fund investment in these land grabs, as a way to sort of sanitize the corporate involvement in these things. And Cargill is a very secretive family company. It's one of the, it is the largest agribusiness corporation in the world. They have said on a number of occasions recently that Mozambique needs to change its land legislation. It needs to make it easier for people to acquire land in the country.
So what kind of commodities are being proposed to be grown in the new agricultural sector?
Well, the main ones are soybean and maize. And the reasons for that are that there's a strong demand in Asia, China particularly for soybeans, but other Asian countries, as you have the growth of the factory farming, industrial meat production in Asia, which is highly dependent on access to cheap soybeans and maize in particular. And it's likely that China, which has started to import maize and which seems to be on a path of increasingly importing maize, will need a new supply of maize, a new global supply of cheap maize in order to sustain its move towards industrial meat production. And the Japanese corporations are positioning themselves for that. So those are their two main targets. They also talk about cotton, which is another big global commodity, but it sometimes is grown in rotation. That's what the big Brazilian farms tend to do, is they grow maize, soybeans, and then cotton. South of the Nacala corridor, they're in the Beira corridor, another corridor. There is already a significant amount of cotton production, and Olam, which is a corporation similar to Cargill, smaller in size, but is certainly growing based out of Singapore. They have been acquiring large areas of land for cotton production there.
What about sugar?
Yes, well, sugar is expanding everywhere in Africa. Not necessarily everywhere, but in the areas where they believe they can expand sugar production. It's become a major crop in Africa, in part driven by a growing demand for ethanol production, in part driven by changes in EU policies, which has meant a decrease in sugar beet production in EU and increasing demand from countries that have preferential access to the EU, which is much of Africa. So there's been a lot of investment in sugarcane production. And Brazilians are very interested in, they're the leading power when it comes to global sugar production. So they are very interested in developing sugar production there, same with South Africans. And in that ProSavanna area, there is talk of some sugarcane production as well. Typically, you need about 20 to 30,000 hectares, they talk about as being ideal for the construction of a sugar refinery. So when a company will invest in sugar plantations with the refinery, it's typically the sort of 20,000-30,000 hectare, which is enormous, plantation that goes alongside a refinery. And then you're seeing these sprouting up all over Mozambique.
We've seen the National Federation of Peasants in Mozambique, UNAC, already issue statements around what's been happening in the Nacala Corridor. What then should people outside of Mozambique be doing in terms of providing solidarity for UNAC and its actions?
Well, in this case, mainly the solidarity needs to come from Japan and Brazil. Already in Japan, there are a loose grouping of people called No Land Grab Japan, which have been circulating information and trying to pressure the government, trying to force the government to come clean about what its intentions are, to explain itself, because so much has been happening behind closed doors. So that's very good. And I think there is increasing interest by the media in the story in Japan as well, which is very important. Similarly, in Brazil, I think the potential there for alliances with the campesino organizations in Brazil, Brazil with a strong history of land struggles also. I mean, there's I'm for sure an identification with what's happening in Mozambique. So I think the more information that gets out in Brazil and the more people are holding their government accountable, that will make a huge difference. And internationally, it's important to look at what some of the other actors are up to. So look at the involvement of the banks, look at the involvement of some of the other corporations, the G8. You know, there are areas there where pressure can be brought to bear on some of those actors as well, which will be very important. Is the World Bank involved? Is the FAO involved? These are spaces where you can have an influence by putting on pressure, by exposing what people are up to. And then when it comes to solidarity with the local organizations, I think UNAC has taken some very strong steps. They're in a very difficult position. They're up against some very powerful forces. But they do have strength in numbers, and they have a very large peasant population, I think, that understands very clearly what's at stake and is very committed to making sure that they keep their land. So anything that can be done to support UNAC in that process, of course, would be really important as well.
Thank you, Devlin, for joining us on this show. I've been talking to Devlin Kuik from Grain. This is Firoz Manji signing off.